Up next, in their Left in the Law segment, Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker look at the picture that is emerging of the coronavirus spreading in jails and prisons across the U.S. They discuss the lawsuits and political actions taken by prisoners themselves to address the pandemic and the growing movement for decarceration as the pandemic and public health fears bring these and other vulnerable groups out from the shadows and into more visibility.
Good morning. This is Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker talking today about the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on prisoners in the United States. The U.S. leads the world in incarceration. With only 5% of the world's population, we have 25% of its prisoners, about 2.2 million people. We now also lead the world in COVID-19 deaths. Mike, tell us what you've learned about the pandemic and how it's affecting people in our vast system of jails and prisons, and also the potential of this crisis for what some advocates are calling decarcerating, for dramatically changing sentencing practices. So let's start with what's happening now in our jails and prisons.
Well, what's happening now, of course, in this country is always hard to know because of the patchwork of different jurisdictions and reporting and testing, but the Marshall Project does a pretty good job of keeping up, and they describe essentially a J curve. That is, we've gone from 272 to 801 to 1643 to 7,000 prisoners week by week by week over this month. But that's deceptive because a lot of the huge increase in the last week has been because of testing. States like Ohio, where they had six people die in a Lisbon, Ohio facility, did widespread testing. And wherever they tested in Tennessee and Ohio and about three other, Michigan, they find lots of people who've already got coronavirus. So it's endemic, it's happening. Correctional officers, not only are they themselves endangered, but they are the typhoid Marys of the system in that they go back and forth. They work in an environment where people are jammed in rooms the size of a ping pong table next to each other, and then they go home and they go to shopping centers. Testing is abysmal, it's just now beginning. But it's spreading throughout the prison system.
What do you make of U.S. Attorney General William Barr ordering just a few weeks ago officials running federal prisons to immediately maximize the release of prisoners to home confinement to prevent the spread of the virus?
Well, it was striking. It was sensible. And the most telling thing for me is the reaction. The Board of Prisons, the BOP, simply doesn't know how to let people out of prison. It's not what they're designed to do, and they have failed to follow up. People have litigated, even successfully, and the Board of Prisons has not let them go. There's been large-scale reluctance to comply with the Attorney General's order. So even when you get a good order from Mr. Barr, it's not, in this case, one that's being quickly or uniformly followed.
What are the legal strategies? Here in Oregon, groups of inmates have filed suits against the state and complaints for their exposure, terms of incarceration, as well as being exposed to the virus through their work in laundry facilities to support state hospitals, another area of shadow labor in the economy that we might take up. But what are the legal strategies in arguing for the rights of prisoners, particularly in the face of the right-wing pushback that these are people that should serve their sentences and they're going to be a danger to the community, that kind of typical conservative backlash that you get?
Well, I'll take your points backwards. I mean, the people who are locked up are not all mad dog felons. There's 55,000 people locked up who've never been convicted of anything at all. They're simply awaiting trial. There's inmates who are 60, 70, 80 years old. There's been a consistent aging of people in state prison as the huge wave of people incarcerated in the 1990s and early 2000s are aging. There are tens of thousands of young people. There are people near the end of their sentence. There are lots of people who could be released. But legal efforts to get them out have not yet succeeded to any large extent. There have been
individuals. There are some places like in Los Angeles and some places in the country where there's been more success than other places with ACLU taking up the basis for pressuring the state to release or jurisdictions to release prisoners?
Well, usually what the judges will say, what even a relatively liberal judge in the Bay Area said, is that you've got to show that the prisons are deliberately indifferent under the Eighth Amendment and the Constitution. And if the prison officials are making some show of effort to deal with the problem and isolate people and let some people go, however weak is that effort, that'll support their efforts. That'll help them survive the Constitution. So there needs to be more political pressure, and people need to understand that there's all kinds of people. There are substantial numbers of people who can be safely released. There's been no efforts, no reports anywhere of people who have been released running amok once they get out on the streets. It should happen, and it will make a substantial difference in the number of dead people and the number of, and the risk that officials and prisoners will themselves spread the coronavirus once they are released.
I mean, one effect here in Oregon and elsewhere of the crisis is to bring the voices of people who are generally in the shadows and not of much public interest and discarded in many ways, and carrying out work, socially necessary work, like the Oregon State Penitentiary and the laundry work. These are people whose stories and suffering are more visible now. Of course, all of that could be gone tomorrow, as often is the case with crises in this country. Could you say a little bit about what's happening in Oregon and then perhaps turn to the potential of this crisis for alternatives to our draconian, punitive criminal justice system?
Well, there are legal efforts underway from us here in Portland, and there is a really thorough examination of this question published in Street Roots, which everybody should get a hold of. They did an excellent review of the entire Oregon prison system and fears and hopes and efforts by people all over the state to get out or to have some social distancing or to have treatment. You know, there's been shockingly little testing. There have been quarantines on death row and OSP in Salem and in other parts of Oregon State Prison because of people testing positive, both staff and prisoners. And there have been recommendations to the governor to do a large-scale release of people, of the kind of people that I talked about, for whom we know there's they have very low recidivism rates, lower than the average random male.
And she's resisted some of those pressures.
Yeah, she has. She's not doing it.
Could you give your take on the move for decarcerating? It reminds me of the move to decarbonize the economy and the level of everyday pathology that this virus is illuminating.
Well, it's a fundamentally crazy system that has a momentum of its own. We went from 200,000 people locked up in 1980 to more than 2 million just two or three decades later. We have a huge number of people locked up, so many now that there are economic interests in people who, institutional food businesses, you know, plate steel manufacturers, all kinds of people now lobby for more prisons. It's a pathological cycle, and I'm hoping that it will break. This could contribute to that breaking. We now know that California had to release tens of thousands of prisoners for over incarceration. The population dropped from 190,000 to 120,000. And without any serious efforts or impacts in terms of increased crime, crime moves in a way that's almost entirely unrelated to how many people are incarcerated. It has to do with a larger social system.
And definitions of crime as well.
That's true. And locking people up has all sorts of bad effects socially on their families and on the system as a whole. And it's hopefully like the fact that DNA has exposed the problems with serious felony prosecutions and made people skeptical of this caused for serious erosion and support for the death penalty. I think as people are released and it will proceed successfully, it'll save the state considerable amounts of money, as prisons have become more financed than universities over the past 30 years. It has so many beneficent effects on the whole society that it's truly, this, I think, is an opportunity to take the right action, which would protect lives, both inside and outside of prison, by significant releases, that in turn would support a further reduction of these crazy incarceration rates that plague the United States right now.
Yeah, well, let's continue to follow this. Whether that trajectory continues depends on what we do about it and how we organize around it. And, of course, here on KABU with our Left and Law segment, as well as other reporting on the Old Mole Variety Hour, we try to bring these experiences of people from the shadows out more center stage. And we'll continue to follow this as the pandemic continues. This is Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker talking today about the coronavirus pandemic, its effect on prisoners, and on the incarceration pandemic itself and how we confront it.